And we're live. Welcome everybody here to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined as I always am for these Friday episodes by Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room. Today on the show, we have kind of a loaded show. We have, according to one very well plugged in reporter, reports that Austin Reeves really wants his max. And there's some fallout to that potential situation there. I do think that it's a little less stark than that. So we'll kind of discuss the gray areas there. We also got a bit of a look at the Lakers' approach to handling LeBron's contract situation this week as well from Eric Pincus, who is also very well plugged in. So Pete and I, we've gone back and forth on that one a few times, but given some newish information or at least a different approach to the information, we'll discuss that situation. I talked yesterday on the show about the Lakers' need for a stretch five and why I am intrigued by Miles Turner as a result of that. So I'm going to pick your brain about that a little bit too, Pete. And then in terms of the actual basketball that's being played, the Knicks lead the Spurs 1-0 in that series. They play tonight. So Pete and I will touch on how that series has gone and that matchup and some of the lessons that we've taken from that. So really fun show lined up for you guys. As always, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Please hit that subscribe button. Today's show is brought to you in a video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and make a $5 lineup of your own and get $50 worth of free lineups. And if you guys are listening to the show a little bit later via podcast, please subscribe wherever you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere is perfectly fine with me. Pete, how you been?
I'm good, man. I got to scratch a rare itch this morning. I rarely ever play video games. And when I do, one of the only ones I ever play are the Sid Meier's Civilization games. I don't know if you've ever seen or played those. Yeah. But basically, you rule over a civilization for like several thousand years. It's super fun, but it takes like really a couple of days to get through a whole game. And so it's one of those things like, as a grown man, I have no business playing this game on a regular basis. But I had a morning, and so I conquered the Hawaiians. I apologize.
Wow.
Yeah, we're in like
after Ricky Martin sang to us at the Super Bowl about what happened to Hawaii.
I know. Yeah, I'm not proud of myself, but they were sitting on some really prime territory with some great resources. So sorry.
I actually scratched a bit of an itch myself yesterday. I went out and watched the He-Man movie.
I loved He-Man when I was like 5 years old. I'll probably watch on video. Yeah.
It was exactly what I wanted it to be. It like mocked us for liking it back in the day, you know,
and just
like,
enough.
Like the story was, you know, but like those stories, they literally retrofit the stories to the toys. So it wasn't like it was ever known for incredible plots. Mm-hmm. And it was just fun to like go and I went solo to the movie last night, so I didn't have to like sit there and wrangle kids during it too. So it was just they serve wine at the theater now. So I had a couple glasses of wine, sat back, watched this movie, and felt like a kid again. It was awesome. It was so fun. I ate too much popcorn, way too many Reese's Pieces. It was great. So it's a good week. It's a positive week here for us. There goes all the light feelings. Let's talk about Austin's max contract. According to Brad Turner, he made an appearance on Spectrum Sportsnet and went through some of the scenarios, the numbers that Austin is potentially due, some of the teams that also might be interested. I can also echo Atlanta's interest is been the loudest, I would say. So far this offseason. And Turner went on to say that Austin is expecting his max contract, wants his max contract. I just for full context here, I don't do this for all reporters. Turner is among the most plugged in reporters out there. He has been on the Lakers beat for a really, really long time. Super well plugged in with Magic Johnson specifically, and Magic is back in the fold here too. And my response to it when I saw it was, this is early stages public negotiation, not giving an inch so that Rob Pelinka doesn't take a mile. I don't expect Austin to be on his max, even though I've heard it. And I've heard that expectation, and I just don't expect the number to creep that high. As that information reaches your table, Pete, where do you stand on it?
I think it's important to define what his max is. To start out, it'd be like 5 years, $241 million, I believe,
yeah,
which puts it at approximately, what's that, $48 million a year? And mm-hmm. So that is, you know, would start out at like a $41 or $42 million deal. Again, Austin only is only on a cap hold right now from a cap machination standpoint. He's only going to count as $20.9 million against the cap, yeah, for team building purposes this year. But then going forward, that will be a very real number the Lakers need to work around. And so, I mean, when that information hits my table, it's like, I want a max contract too. Don't you? You know what I mean? Like, I think it's totally reasonable for Austin to ask for and want to get in the very first free agency that he has, that isn't sort of like what he will make would be dictated, right? Because the last time when he signed the deal that's currently expiring is like, this is the most we can offer you. You know, it was, and it was still undervalued and he was still underpaid. So there was no real negotiation there, right? He got a player option. He got whatever they could offer. But I think that that's just part of negotiation. I think it's important to point out too, though, Anthony, that he can't get that in those kind of numbers anywhere else. He can get a 4 year, I want to say 178 is the number or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the mechanisms in place around the league to keep players where they are. You know, I have skepticism
and
about
and also like also on that note, as far as like mm-hmm. what he can get elsewhere, there just is not a ton of money out there.
Right. You know, there's not a ton
teams
of money
that would be in a position mm-hmm. he wants to win, you know, and so like it should also be noted that, like, you know, even though he can technically get that kind of a number, there would like Atlanta would need to do some work to be able to open that much space up.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. For a halfway competitive team like Brooklyn could offer him that, or Chicago, I think, could probably get there decently easily.
Right.
But does Austin want to go play for some bad teams and be the man on that team?
Does he want to be in Milwaukee on a post-Giannis team?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe, I don't know, but it would fly in the face of kind of everything he's ever said on the topic. And so that doesn't mean the Lakers can just, you know, take that mile that you were talking about earlier. But I do think that it's going to be a negotiation. I think that was always going to be the case.
That, I think, is the important takeaway here. And the reason that I say that's an important takeaway here is because the Lakers need Austin to kind of work with them a little bit in order for their offseason to go the best way that it possibly can, right? They need to be able to, like, they need to land on a number relatively quickly with Austin and then say, hey, we have you on this cap hold. Eventually, we're going to sign you to this contract, but we need you to agree to this number. We need to get this number out of the way, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back to you and we'll sign you to whatever number that we need to sign you to. And if Austin, who is an unrestricted free agent, right, gets, you know, word from Atlanta, hey, we're willing to do this much to open up this much space to be able to give you whatever number that, you know, that would, you know, woo you away from the Lakers, that makes the offseason really tricky. And even while I'm not one of the people who was just like, give Austin the max, let's just move on out of here, like, let's get this done with, I also am of the opinion very strongly that, like, losing him for nothing would suck. You know, losing him for nothing would be absolutely brutal. And so, like, that negotiation, the Lakers are going to be, you know, they're going to have other things going on. Now, the nice thing is they can technically do that negotiation now, right? Like,
they could have been having this conversation all year, right?
Over the course of the season, this could be done already for all we know. And I would even say that like, because of the standing that I know, Aaron Riley and Austin's camp have with the Lakers organization, And given that Luka Doncic really wants Austin there, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the lifting wasn't already taken care of, and that they've arrived at a number. This specific type of noise, right? That like Austin wants his max, and I saw actually earlier Eric Pincus also kind of alluded to Austin's number being around like $35 million a year. Mm-hmm. That kind of tells me where those two sides are doing a little bit of talking, you know, because Eric is very well plugged in with the Laker side of things. And so, yeah, like the way that this all kind of plays out is playing out, I think is somewhat noteworthy given the amount of machinations that need to line up for this offseason to go the way that it can. What do you think about those potential wrinkles?
Yeah, in terms of needing Austin to sort of play ball, that's an important part of things. Luka allegedly speaking up and saying, hey, it's important to me that he comes back, I think is a very important factor. I do think that like having a walkaway point for the Lakers is important, really, in any negotiation. Yeah. This is a summer where they have so many options that they shouldn't be leveraged really by anybody. They should have a multitude of plan Bs and plan Cs. And so, like, it's important to be able to, again, have that type of walkaway number. Now, I agree with you, though, that losing him for nothing would suck. But one of the only things that sucks more than that is having a dude on an overpaid contract that you can't move and you can't build a team around. And this is something that the Lakers have really worked toward. Now, Austin has earned a certain degree of like, no, we know Austin's a good player, but these are not good player monies. This is not good player money. This is like... Yeah. You're one of the best dudes in the league type of money. And on a team that's trying to win a championship, can Austin be that? I don't believe that. I don't believe Austin can be one of the two best players on a championship team. And so, like, frankly, this whole thing I am very uncomfortable with overall. Just, and those type of numbers to me are astronomically out of whack, the full Laker max type of thing. But even Austin at 40 a year, like, we have the team building tool for the 20.9 cap hold to really come into play this year. But so long as you can move him to another team that goes, yeah, I'm happy to pay Austin whatever the number is, that's the number that I'm happy with. But I'm very nervous about this negotiation in particular, just because I don't fundamentally really believe in the Luka Austin combo to be able to win a title.
Can we talk about, because you kind of briefly alluded to like how uncomfortable you are talking about this. This is my least favorite aspect of this job, where because of the CBA, like somebody in the comment section the other day was like, well, this has nothing to do with the CBA. Like these negotiations and the way they play out, they have nothing to do with this current CBA. And it's like, no, they absolutely do, because in prior CBAs, a second best player would just get his max and you'd be able to work around it. There weren't these aprons that would literally limit the number of things that you can do as a team to build out your roster. Now, teams, if they, you know, signed one too many of those contracts and the luxury tax bill came due, like that would place some limitations on what teams would be able to do there. But for the most part, with the soft cap, with your and if you're the Lakers, it didn't matter how far above the cap that you went. If the Buss family thought that the Lakers were a championship caliber team, and that player was a championship caliber player, then you just kind of worked out the number, and you and I didn't really have to sit here and count other people's pennies. And this is like,
part. Yeah,
that's the part of this that I just cannot stand. Is that like I'm sitting here and somewhat inherently. Fans have to root that these guys get paid below market value, right? Like OKC is thrilled that they have AJ Mitchell in the $9 million contract. The San Antonio Spurs fans are thrilled that they have Champagne at a 4-year, $12 million contract. Like, I hate that that the players union have basic and the owners have basically negotiated to a place where like we have to sit here and operate as accountants. And like, I like Austin. I want him to get paid. I like Aaron. I want that entire camp to get paid. And yet I am a Laker fan and I run a Lakers show whose ratings get better when the Lakers win stuff. And I also want and in order for the Lakers to win stuff, you need guys at as reasonable contracts as possible. How do you navigate these waters? Because I really struggle with it.
I mean, I struggle with it on one hand. I'm also old enough to have seen enough players that I really love come and go. That I like, there are only a small handful of like that really breaks my heart when they leave players. Again, I would love for Austin to
be
able to stick around. But
is it Caruso? Caruso's one.
Yeah, well, Caruso was heartbreaking because it was like, this dude's still good and wanted to come back at $6 million a year. It's like, it pisses me off on like four different levels. You know what I mean? So I think Caruso pisses me off. Like, it's heartbreak, but it is. Yeah. And,
yeah.
He's one of them. But I mean, it's the legends. It's, you know, Kobe and guys like, you know, Powell, guys that have been, you know, really long term.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't love this part of it, but it's part of being able to build a championship team. If you look at every top team, they have some way of being efficient with the salary cap, whether it's rookie contracts and Wemby's making what, like $13 million this year, which is insane.
Yeah.
Like, think of how good of a team you could build if you started with just Wemby at $13 million, right? And then you stack Castle and Harper on top of that. And you know, the Knicks, I think, are the closest example to the Lakers because they didn't tank. They don't have all of these rookie contracts. They don't have any, but they're super efficient with their roster. They don't have any bad money on their roster the way that the Lakers do. And so I understood why Kleba was on the roster. He was part of the Luka trade. But like the Vando deal is harmful. A couple million for Dalton. You know, Lakers, I think, have to pare that out, you know, going that way. And so in terms of like the fandom and the, like, I hate counting other people's money. I very much feel that way. It's also like, we're doing it from the perspective of trying to build build a title team for the Lakers, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, I think it would be easier if I didn't know these people at all. It would be a lot easier if I didn't say a certain thing and I didn't get a text from people saying like, hey, what the fuck?
Sure. You know, well, like, that's why I try to keep a distance on some, even with people that I do talk to. I'm like, look, I'm not your friend. Like, I'm your friend, but I'm not your friend in this position. You know what I mean? Like, you are in this position that impacts this thing for the Lakers. And it's like, that's part of our job as media. Like, we are a part of the media now, people like us. And that's part of the reason that you don't become friends with the people that you cover, is that you got to be able to talk about them honestly.
Yeah. And that's always what I try to say, you know, and I'll come back and I'll say like, yeah, I said this certain thing, but I have to keep it a buck, you know, like if my audience gets the sense that I'm playing favorites with, you know, players or people who I happen to be closer with, then like that, they're going to turn the show off.
And if they text you back and explain to you why you're full of shit, that's actually helpful. Like, I'm here to listen to whatever your case is
for
why you disagree with what I said. But it's like, yeah, I'm not here to just cape for you.
Let's say the Lakers do have a walkaway number and Austin does go. What pathways do you see to keeping the team at the same level, even let alone improving the team? Would you want to go, like, would you immediately start saying what the situation is with like Ayu Dosunmu? Like, would you like, What would you do here? Would the Lakers be better off potentially and like, you know, kicking the tires on Dosunmu and seeing it, you know, hey, that guy's a little bit better defender, you know, does that guy make a little bit more sense? I think the number that I've seen most recently on him is around 20 or so million bucks a year. Is that something that the Lakers would be smart to check in on before they arrive at a number here with Austin? What path would you take here?
No, I think that's probably the best player that you would look toward. And again, a lot of these evaluations are not like, is Io a better player overall than Austin? I don't think he is.
Right.
But is Io at 20 a better value, a better player than Austin at 40 something? And I would say yes. But I do think that the walkaway number for Austin, like that disparity between what another team can offer him, and what the Lakers can offer him, I do think the other teams max, when you average it out over the course of 4 or 5 years, and there are player options, team options, things like that. But if you start with the number, you know, at what did Eric say, like 35, something like that?
Yeah.
And then that escalates over the course of 5 years. Over the course of the contract, that's like $39 million a year or something like that, $40 million a year. So I could see them coming to terms around sort of like what another team could offer. But the Lakers are also going to be like, they're going to be doing their intel and research on like you're talking about Atlanta. I guarantee you they've looked into, like, well, what's Atlanta up to? Because Austin isn't the only thing that Atlanta had. Like, yes, they theoretically could clear some books, but they could also theoretically go after Jaylen Brown or one of the other trades that are on the market right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, he won't be. Mm-hmm. And their evaluation of how likely it is that they could get him is, and the same thing would be true of Brooklyn or Chicago or anybody else that could offer him money. So the degree to which the Lakers are like, prove it, prove that you can get that deal that you're talking about somewhere else. That's something I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. It should also be noted on Atlanta specifically, they've had interest on Austin dating back to when the Lakers tried to trade for DeJounte Murray. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta's interest in Austin actually wound up holding up that deal. And you know, the two teams have spoken. I think it's somewhat different leadership, or it is just outright different leadership now in place there in Atlanta. But I'm just saying that, like, the two teams have been linked on Austin here for a while. So it wouldn't surprise me if, like, there haven't been conversations already so far this summer on, like, hey, you know, what are you guys looking at? What are we looking at? Like, what, you know, figuring out. But that's the nice thing here is the Lakers fill out their organization is, and as they add more voices here and more backgrounds, is that you'll have just inherently more information to be able to work with, mm-hmm. what other teams are looking to do than the Lakers have had over the last however many years. And that's another bonus to the Dodgerfication of the Lakers. So we'll see how this all plays out. Last thing on Austin's number here. I do hope, like, it behooves the Lakers to sign Austin to a bigger number this year and then have that escalate down, in my opinion.
De-escalate.
Mm-hmm. So that it, A, the contract is kind of inherently more movable. This year, you're going above the cap to sign him anyway, so it doesn't necessarily hurt you so much to have him at a bigger number now than it does in the next few years. Mm-hmm. And so, like, just from a, you know, kind of manipulating all this stuff as best you can. Again, if they're open to doing business here, which I'm sure if you say, like, hey, are you open to a $41 million contract this summer? Like, I think that would get their interest. And then have it de-escalate from there. We'll see what that looks like. Another touchy situation that the Lakers are trying to navigate or will have to navigate is this spot that they find themselves with LeBron. We got rumors over the week that apparently Steph has been in contact with LeBron about, you know, going up there and playing in the Bay. Mm-hmm. Eric Pincus also kind of wrote in his article about how, the Lakers are kind of building out, and you've talked about this too, but they're building out their team as best they can. And then they'll go back to LeBron with, you know, to ask him what kind of interest he has in playing on whatever roster they wind up putting together. And Eric, in his kind of offseason predictions, actually predicted that LeBron would go up to the Bay on the
MLE,
the max, the MLE, right? The
2 years, $30 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I find that interesting, not surprising, but interesting. It's always going to be somewhat surprising to see, like, LeBron in a different uniform. Like, that'll be a weird moment if it does actually come to that. But Pete, you've been talking a lot about how people are kind of looking at this LeBron situation through the LeBron prism and not necessarily through the Lakers prism. This is the first kind of national media or big media confirmation of that analysis. So why don't you kind of run through that again? And again, like, as we hear that from Eric here, do you think that's the right approach?
It depends on who's available. That's the information that they're sort of comparing bringing LeBron back against, right? But the idea of them, like, moving on from LeBron this summer, like, I've said this on my show, but the first time I heard about the 2026 summer was in late 2023. And there was a person that was, I kind of wanted to just learn more about front offices and stuff. And there was a person that was helping me do that without giving away any information about anything. But it was just like, how we did that, like, I would draw out, they were like, okay, give me your 2-year plan for the team, right? And so that was one of those exercises. And I gave them whatever my half-cooked idea was. And they were like, are you considering Austin's extension in the summer of 2026 when we have everything off of the books? I'm like, oh, I guess I wasn't thinking that far ahead, you know? And so that all of the ducks being sort of lined up to this, and then Luka, the acquisition of Luka, Anthony, it I think gave that more shape of we are in an era change and it's going to be built around Luka. And so I think that's really going to be their approach to this offseason. And that's such just a different way of approaching LeBron in the first place, who used to be the center of the universe, that like
it's sort of an afterthought.
Yeah. And it's sort of like the way that Pink has put it, I thought was accurate relative to my information, is just that LeBron is sort of a fallback plan from their perspective. Like if they ended up with LeBron as, you know, main cog on next year's team, I think that would be a result of them trying to explore other things and then not really liking them enough and then going back to LeBron. So how does LeBron feel about that? I, you know, interesting question, but yeah, that's how I think things stand.
So the LeBron, how does LeBron feel about that thing? It's interesting because right now, like I forget if I talked about it yesterday, the day before, or all these shows, you know, this, you do a daily show. They all kind of blend together. But right now, if the Lakers were to have a conversation with LeBron about a number, they would find themselves at a more awkward spot now than they will later in the offseason, because now they technically can offer LeBron more than Golden State, than Cleveland, than everybody else, right? They can offer, they literally and objectively can offer LeBron more. They're the only team, frankly, that can offer LeBron a number that he would be comfortable with going into next season, right? Obviously, they don't want to. I think that's become abundantly clear that the Lakers don't want to offer LeBron a 50-some-odd million dollar, even 1 year deal. But they can. Now, if they were to figure out the rest of their offseason and they were to carry out their plans and go back to LeBron and say, this is all we can give you, that makes that conversation somewhat easier. Now, the risk there is that, like, all of these, you know, the Warriors would be able to basically go to him and be like, we can give you the most, we are interested in giving you the most we can actually give you. And in that sense, and just in raw salesperson standing, that's a lot more positive than like, yeah, we want to do all these other things. In order to do those things, you would have to be at this number. We don't necessarily see you at this number, but are you interested in being at that number? Rather than it's like, look, LeBron.
If I were LeBron, man, I'd be saying, you're so full of shit. Like, you right. knew exactly what number you could have offered me earlier. I don't think he's too smart for that. They're not going to be able to be like, oh, you know, sorry, this is all we've got to offer you. Like, motherfucker, you could have offered me that at the beginning of the offseason if that's what you thought. Like, they are showing him, like, they're not going to be able to sweet talk it on the other end of things. Like, for me, the thing I'm most interested in monitoring on all of this is, for one, like, to what degree he's the fallback plan, but also to what degree, like, they're interested in having him back at all, frankly. Like, I'm very curious to see what degree that it's like you're talking about trying to finesse it and at the end of the offseason being like, oh, LeBron, we really want you back, and it's kind of full of shit, right? But like, I'm interested to what degree they're like, actually, we'd like to build our own team and, you know, kind of move on. Like, Iztok wrote a great thing. Iztok Franco wrote a great thing about, like, you know, one of the premises was like, the Luke era probably doesn't really start until LeBron's gone. And it's not intended as a disrespect toward LeBron. I just think it's a basic team building thing. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that the Lakers would be able to, like, you know, sweet talk their way out of giving LeBron a contract that is way beyond what he would respect. I'm more talking about it from the advantage that Golden State and that Cleveland have, where they're like, this is the most that we can give you. If we could, we sure. would give you more. And that's an advantage that, like, the Lakers need to find their way around if they are interested in bringing LeBron back. And mm-hmm. and now look, like, that point that you made there at the end, that's something that I haven't really seen talked about.
Yeah, I've been telling
which you. Is like, I know you have, but I'm saying that, like, I haven't seen basically anybody say, should the Lakers want LeBron back? You know,
I'm not even arguing that. I don't even care about my opinion on this. It's
not you. I'm saying they
the Lakers want LeBron back?
Do they want LeBron back? And I think that is something that, like, traditionally speaking, if you're building a basketball team, you want LeBron James on it, you know? And I think now there's a lot going on there in that relationship between LeBron and the Lakers. And I think there's obviously a lot going on there as far as the Lakers moving on into the Luka era, you know, and all these things. Like, there's just this entire conversation is just so insanely wrought. Like, there's just no way to have it that won't come off as slanted in one way or the other. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, if I say, like, because I think LeBron, if I were LeBron, I'd fucking retire. I would tell all these teams, like, no, you don't get my farewell tour on $15 million next year. Fuck you, people. I'm out. I've been recording my documentary anyway. I'm out of here, you know, just on principle. The Warriors could try to say, look, like, we really, really want. If I was LeBron and Cleveland came to me and said, hey, the most that we could possibly offer you is this, I'd be like, no, actually, we have a cap guy. Clutch has a cap guy. He says you guys could sign a trade Jared Allen and I could make more money for you guys. Am I worth that amount of money to you? You know, and depending on his response now, like, this is the unfortunate spot that LeBron finds himself here where the league has kind of sort of moved on.
Yeah, and I don't think that they would say yes to that. Yeah.
Right. Like, Cleveland would just come back and say, well, this is awkward, you know, and that's why this entire situation is just so impossible to have while being true to all of the interested parties here. I do still say, and I keep on coming back to, I think the Lakers have a comfortably 3-year window with Luka playing at an MVP level. And anything beyond that, given the way that he's treated his body over the years and given everything that he puts on his body over the course of a season, I don't think he's going to age like LeBron aged. I don't think he's going to, like, I'm nervous about that. And if, like, we've already done the, we'll see, you know, what comes about at the end of this season. We've already kicked that can down the road on one of those prime seasons. And if on another one is like, well, we're trying to, you know, move off of the LeBron era and fully move into the Luka era. And are you, like, spiting your face by way of, or cutting off your nose to spite your face?
Spite your face.
Like, are you kicking off those plans too early for the sake of kicking off those plans? When in reality, the best basketball thing you could do is have LeBron James on your basketball team. And that's the part of it that I keep running into.
Yeah. For 1 year at a decent sized contract, but beyond a certain number, really that MLE type of number, like, it's probably not, right? Like, you probably can't replace him. I think that's one of the practical issues, is that if he's beyond a certain number. Now, again, though, that comes down to the point of if LeBron wants to take that type of money, but I think that's sort of where things will coalesce around.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he kind of sort of has to. Like,
we'll see. I make no predictions on that front. Like, I don't know how LeBron's going to move off of that. I just do know that the Lakers have been, like, looking forward to this summer for a long time.
Yeah. That begs the question, because we have a couple minutes before we get to the Knicks-Spurs series. That begs the question. What do you think about, like, hearing that they have been planning for this while LeBron has been as good as he's been for the last few years? That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the year I disagreed with them on, I think they punted 23-24. And I think that they screwed up even during the season that much. But I think the 23-24 deadline, that team was starting to play really good basketball and could have used a boost. And that was really the only time, though, that they sort of punted that and had been looking toward that. But after that, obviously, that's sort of been in the mode. We've been in an era change. And that was even the point that I was making last summer, where I was like, no, we're not going to go after, like, a $30 million forward or something like that, or something that has long-term money or something like that, precisely because all the ducks had been lined up for this. And so I don't know how you would have gotten to a championship team, like kind of with where they were without throwing everything in. And that was the calculation that they made, is that for first, they wanted assets for a superstar, keep that, and they got one in Luka, and then to be able to build around that superstar. Now, I think that that's validated somewhat by being able to acquire the first guy, but this is the summer, like this is like 70% of the work to me. I love that we got Luka, and I agree that the time is now, and it's really the next 3 years, but it's this summer that's going to determine so much of the next 3 years, and I think that's part of the LeBron calculation, is it's not just next season's team, it's the year after that and the year after that.
So my one, not even counter necessarily, because it's not like you're sitting here arguing on behalf of the Lakers here.
Yeah, I'm just conveying a perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My issue with this whole like lining everything up for this summer thing is, if that is what you're doing, then you need to accumulate more assets than they have to this point, because they have what, 3 first round picks, and that's including if they draft somebody and trade the rights to that guy on draft day. Like, they haven't done, this is what like the Warriors ran into, but on the opposite end of the spectrum with the 2-line timeline, right? Or the 2-timeline thing, where they were, you know, when you have a Steph Curry on your team and he's still playing at the level that he's playing at, and you have an eye towards the future, you were not serving either of those things. And I think while you have a LeBron James on your team, and I think the person who really kind of let the Lakers and LeBron down through all of this is actually Anthony Davis. Like, I love AD. I'm always going like peak AD on the Lakers, one of my favorite players of all time. But I don't think he took his conditioning as seriously as he needed to. And I thought that really, and his shooting and all of that stuff fell off a cliff to such a point that like it, if the Lakers sat here and say, I don't know that we can build around a guy who can't shoot but wants to play the four, like I can kind of sort of understand where they arrive at that conclusion. But still, if you're putting your ducks in a row, or if you're lining up your ducks for this summer, I would have preferred that they do more to even if it's like second round pick acquisition, you know, spinning off, you know, they've had expiring contracts that they've just let expire. Well, could you have traded that player and his expiring contract to a team that was contending for a second round pick that year while you weren't going for it?
While we were trying to make the playoffs and be as good as we could be. Like that's the point about the Lakers can't tank comes into play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, yeah, we could probably traded Austin a couple of years ago for a couple of firsts to load up for this summer, right? Or, you know what I'm saying? Traded good players for not much in return, but we would have been screaming bloody murder at the time.
Well, so I'm glad that you made this point, because this whole like Lakers can't tank thing, that's just a commitment issue. Like this whole notion that the Lakers can't, they did tank. We watched them tank. That's how they got Anthony Davis. That's how they won the 2019-2020 championship. Now, maybe the people specifically who've been running these Lakers can't tank because they got those jobs by firing Jim Buss for tanking. Mm-hmm. Like maybe that's the Lakers
were tanking in the mid teams. I think we were just bad. We signed Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng to fucking massive amounts of money. We had a bunch of 19-year-olds on the team, like, and Kobe dragging his leg around on a max contract. The team just stunk. I don't think they were. I mean, I think it was a functional tank for sure, but I don't.
Yeah, like, I don't know. What was the low called it? A stealth tank, right?
I think we were just bad.
But yes. I don't think you employ Byron Scott to win basketball games. Like,
behind the times, man. We were. You remember where things were?
Like, at the time. It might just be that the people who were running the Lakers were inept, and we got to benefit from, you know, long-term from that ineptitude, which, you know, altogether possible. Mitch Kupchak wasn't that inept though.
He wasn't, but that was Jim Buss's. Like Jim Buss was the dude that was in charge of that. Like Mitch obviously had a little more pull cause he'd been the GM, but that was Jim Buss's baby, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. My thing is, it's so funny. Last night in that movie last night, my number one criticism of the He-Man movie was that, like, if you're going to be quirky and funny and you're going to wink to the audience and you're going to do all those things, then you better commit. And remember in the old cartoon, they had that wizard, the faceless wizard, was it Orko? And Orko doesn't appear at all over the main plot of the movie. He doesn't show up until like the very, very end, the post-credit scene where he like says the spoiler alert, everybody, but he just gives like the lesson of the movie, right? Remember how they used to in like the 80s and the cartoons?
Oh yeah, the moral of the story at the end of
G.I. Joe. the moral of the story. And Orko Bait, like he did, and it's like, guys, because they did such a good job of being funny and being quirky, and it was so light and stuff, and yet they stopped right there. And it's like, if you're gonna be as quirky as you want to be, and you want to really push the envelope with how weird a movie can get, then go all the freaking way and give me Orko, you know. And I think here with the Lakers, if you want to be like you can be whatever whatever organization you sell the fan base on. And if you basically say, hey, this is what we have to do, you know, in order to build for this, whatever this is. And if you sell it to the fan base part of this is actually like Rob Pelinka doing interviews at a time where he hasn't just traded for Luka Doncic.
Hold on. Like, if I can interrupt, you have to sell it to LeBron. You can't take LeBron on the team.
Well, but like they did. They didn't compete.
They didn't compete either.
Like
they were a playoff team. They didn't throw every last asset toward the LeBron and AD era. But they didn't.
And that's part of why LeBron now is kind of like looking at them sideways in an offseason where they'd kind of sort of like to get him at $15 million a year.
Would they?
You know? Yes, they would like to get him at $15 million a year.
We'll see.
You know? But I think that's part of why the relationship between LeBron and Clutch and the Lakers is where it is, because they have been kind of, you know, sad hand jobbing this whole situation for like three years.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like that's where we've been, is that they've been setting up the ducks in a row for this season. They, you know, wanted to be as good as they could while waiting for this offseason to be able to really go for it. And so it is a two timeline thing. And ideally it would be like, okay, we're not going to be really lining it up until 26. Let's liquidate for assets. But that's like Lakers had to play a game that was a little bit in between. And that's long-term is not as good as having those assets, but there's also not like, you don't have the calm-ish waters, but over the last couple of years where you're winning 50 games, you get to the first round last year, the second round this year, like this was not we weren't, you know, barbarians at the gates with our pitchforks and torches this year toward the team. And like, that's important for them too, you know? So I get your point, but I think that's just the two timelines they were navigating.
Yeah. I guess like I'm always going to look at things where it's like, if you aren't competing for a championship, then like compete to eventually win a championship, you know? And you know, like my, you know, this, I'm a Vikings fan. My buddy down the street is also a Vikings fan. And I asked him one day, I was like, would you rather be where like the Vikings are, where every year they have a pretty good team, you're never going to win a Super Bowl. You're never in on like Aaron Donald. You're never in on Miles Garrett. You're always like an okay team, and you're always going to win around, 10 to 12 games. Occasionally you'll jump up a couple of games. Occasionally you'll fall down a couple of games, but for the most part, being a Vikings fan is like it's a pizza life. There's no such thing as a bad slice of pizza. Right.
Right.
But I would love to see the Vikings win a Super Bowl. And I just don't think I'm ever going to see the Vikings win a Super Bowl because of their approach to this. And with like this approach that the Lakers have done, they find themselves, they have Luka Doncic, but they don't necessarily have all of the assets that you would like to be able to build with Luka Doncic for, because they've been okay for the last few years. You just, I just don't think now today's NBA is rewarding teams for being okay. Which, you know, we'll see what that looks like, you know, down the road, but we'll see.
Look, man, I understand and even defend sort of the rationale of getting here. Like to whatever degree I agree, like I think getting Luka validates their idea, but if they don't nail that shit this summer and Like, my thought is, I want to see a championship on the horizon at the end of this summer. If you need to make a trade deadline deal for the missing, you know what I'm saying? Not like one piece or something like that. But the whole, what invalidates their whole theory on waiting and kind of being in this in-between place the last couple of years is if you wait for all of that and then you come out with a team that's like, okay, again, it's like we're a 53-win team this year, a 55-win team, but not a contender. And then it's like, oh, hell no, because then we just wasted these other seasons of being in between, and then I'm going to be pissed off. So I have my anger in reserve for this, Anthony, I promise you. Like, I'm not just trying to defend them. I understand their perspective, but they have to, like, nail this summer for the whole thing, for proof of concept, you know?
Yeah, no, that we a zillion percent agree on. Let's discuss this. Well, which would you rather do, Miles Turner or the Knicks and Spurs?
Let's do Turner. We've been on the sort of offseason.
So my thinking with Turner is that I think the Lakers next season are going to have to be able to throw five out as one of the pitches that they can confidently throw. Not like Christian Wood, maybe, you know, not that like slider that your pitcher worked on midway through the season. Like, no, I want the Lakers to be able to throw five out as a pitch that, you know, big spot, you know, 2-2 count with a runner on second, your pitcher is willing to throw that pitch, at least to surprise a batter. That's where I'm at with five out, and I'm looking across the market and it's like, do you want to bet on Kristaps Porzingis immune system? Do you want to, you know, do you want to gamble on Nikola Vucevic like at like an exception? Like, my thing with Turner is, of all of the bigs that you defend, could possibly acquire who allows you to play five out, he's the only one I've seen play even decently in a playoff in the last few years. And that's where I arrive at, like, damn it, I think the Lakers, he's like Thanos, he's like trade rumor Thanos, like, you all of that, you come back to me. I'm interested in Miles Turner. I'm interested in Miles Turner this summer.
It's so funny how eras, like, I was laughing with somebody yesterday how, like, the Celtics always have some goon on the bench that's like, it's been like Greg Kite to Baylor Shireman and all of Eric Montross and all of these guys, all of these guys in between. It's the same type of thing here where the Pacers always seem to have a big man that is in perpetual Laker rumors. Like, back in my day, it was Jermaine O'Neal. I swear to God, we traded for Jermaine O'Neal for 10 fucking years. And never ended up landing him, right? There's a Bynum rumor. Danny Granger was involved. It was sad. It was almost broke. And now Turner has been, like, how many years has Turner been involved in Laker trade rumors?
But you can, like, schedule the tweet.
That's part of the reason why is, and even that resolution of having Turner at the five around AD, that's part of the reason he was in those talks. Like, you talk about AD wanting to play the four, a five like that can open that up and make that at least feasible. I also totally understand the, like, if you watch Miles Turner, especially this year, it was like, he's so
really
bad. He's so meh for, like, the amount of money that he makes, that just the ability to go five out, it's like, I don't know, can we bring Bobby?
That's Porter a lot of resources just, like, for one potential pitch.
Right. Yeah. And then, but as you said, like, a lot of the guys that can go five out are twigs. Like, that's one thing about Turner. He's not the shot blocker that he used to be, but he's also not a guy that's so skinny that you can just kind of go through him. But a lot of those stretch type five type of guys are not really as solid. And if they are, they can't really move their feet. And Turner can move his feet a little bit on the perimeter. So it's really paying for a level of two-way play in your five out look, which is important. You can't credibly go five out. Like, a lot of these teams that can do it are, you know, have Wemby and Chet and Evan Mobley, and Chet and Mobley are two guys that I can get on, you know, but, like, they do facilitate kind of these type of looks because of that versatility. And so, but they're skinny, you know? And so finding those guys that can do that, it's tough. So the five out market is very thin.
The Turner thing also, you know, Milwaukee is really trying to get off of money for the post Giannis era. And I don't think they would be able to get anything for taking Turner's contract. Like, you and I have talked about this off the air, and then I've kind of asked around, and because there's at least two other teams that I've heard that are kind of interested in Turner, the idea that, like, you can get, like, a second rounder or two second rounders for taking on Turner, maybe you could get off of Vando's money for taking on, you know, Turner, mm-hmm. or like Vando's contract goes elsewhere as part of the deal, and you open up that much more money, or you keep some money open. But like Turner, you know, he has 2 years and a player option left on his contract. He is approaching 30. That contract takes him through to his age 32 season. It's one of those contracts that we can already report. He has picked up that option, mm-hmm. for the player option. But the other thing too is like, if you acquire Turner and Ayton opts in, your center rotation is in kind of an interesting spot, right? Especially if you re-sign Jackson, because now you have three very different bigs that you have, mm-hmm. right? You have your athletic rim runner, over the top finisher in Jackson. You have your kind of bigger anchor big in Ayton. You have your floor spacer in Turner. Theoretically, even though I don't think JJ would ever go to a lineup with both of like two of those bigs in the same lineup, but theoretically, you could play a really bulked up team with Turner and Jackson, or Turner and Ayton, or something along those lines. I just think he opens up some things for the Lakers that like, if you try to fill this role by other cheaper means, that player mm-hmm. that you acquire is not going to play in the playoffs. I can already mm-hmm. predict, like, whatever player that the Lakers acquire that doesn't involve paying $25-ish million a year to Turner, that player that you pay somebody $13 million to, or $7 million to, that player is not going to be a 16 win player. And like, that's the point here.
That's the whole point of it. Right. Towards, right.
You know,
but he's so meh. He's so
all right. How much of his meh-ness has to do with that? No, you're absolutely right. It's the exact word to use. Right. But it's like, how much of that meh-ness has to do with Milwaukee, which was basically Milwaukee last year, you know,
well, he was the like starting center in the finals the year before that, right? Like,
yeah,
it's both. Like, I think he's lost a step defensively. He was a guy a couple of years ago that I thought was really, but mm-hmm. I don't say that based off of his play in Milwaukee, because I do think that's heavily influenced on we kind of suck and this is nothing nowhere near as fun as it was last year in Indiana, like from a player experience, but I got my money. I got my long-term contract and all that. So I'm set, you know, so I thought his like effort level, but that's not super uncommon. I don't love his personality as well, but the skill set, I totally agree with your point that like, if you dip below, he might be the floor of like, yeah, he could be our starting center for the freaking good team. That's, you know what I mean?
He's like the lowest rung on the ladder that like you avoid getting eaten by sharks, you know, like the whole time that your foot is on that rung of the ladder, you're like, please don't jump. Please don't jump. Yeah. You know? Yeah. There's just no other options, you know, that I would be all that thrilled about. And I think that's something like, do you agree that that's something that the Lakers have to be able to do next year?
I do. That's something that I was, while watching San Antonio versus OKC. And I think you see an extension of that with Cat versus Wemby, of how important this is at the highest level. So this is something that I very much believe. I do think it needs to be a pitch, but if I think it can be a, like, they either need a five, like a killer roll man five, who's a defender of the rim. Like Kessler is the guy who comes to mind, in that respect, or, that, if you're not a stretch five, and even he started taking a few of those at the beginning of last year, if you're not, you're just really good on both ends of the floor at both, then you could do that. But otherwise, like, yeah, I think that it can be that. This is sort of why I go toward the three-headed monster idea, is when I go through the league, it's like, oh, he's not going to be available, or he's not good enough. And Turner is sort of in that gray area of the two, where I go more and more toward, there is that bucket of guys that are 15 million or so that I think can provide that type of look. I just also agree with your point that you got to have a closing five. That dude's probably not gonna, like, is Mitchell Robinson gonna close the game for us? Is Time Lord could close? I love Time. If he was healthy, I would love to get Time Lord. Yeah. But even he, like, neither of those guys are starters, for example, but they're those type of bigs in that $15 million range. Like, that's not really the caliber of five that you see at the highest levels here with Cat and Wemby and all them dudes.
Yeah, Time Lord. Time Lord is a guy that I have on my radar just because it's a very Dodgers-y move. Somebody that the Lakers have liked over the last few years anyway, finally got healthy, and now the Lakers are going to have like Dodgers resources for their medical team. Mm-hmm. And I could see,
honestly, he's legit like, good. Like he's the one guy of that lower, like you, if you're not paying a ton of money, that I'm like, oh yeah, he's totally good enough. It's not a talent issue with him. Like he's strong. He's obviously really even super explosive. He can switch. He can run drops. He can show high. Like he's a really good player when he's, I've loved him for years, but just the injury issues, man.
See, it was Blazers Spurs in the first round, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He played well in that series. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly.
Yeah. He's a good playoff player. He's been good in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I love like he just doesn't get moved. And mm-hmm. I think that's like critical. Like that's the one knock on Jackson, right? He would be so much more valuable if he like, but he gets moved so easily. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to be able to get Kessler.
Agreed.
The Denver situation intrigues me. I do think the Lakers would be smart to throw an offer at Watson and then see what shakes out from it, you know?
Okay.
But that also ties up that money for 48 hours and, you know, free agency moves quickly. So, but I do think though, that like, if you basically throw like a $32 to $35 million offer at Denver and force Kroenke to face staring, you know, like to stare luxury taxes down, that like forces his hand to either sign, you know, to match the offer or to trade like a Cam Johnson or a Brown or Christian Brown or an Aaron Gordon. Gordon, as somebody I've seen linked to the Lakers a little bit, I'm just so nervous about his hamstrings. Like I'm worried that they're just toast at this point, but we'll see. Let's run through some of the questions here. Let me just make sure. Yeah, we do. Wow, we do. All right. So if you have to roll out your Pete.
We were talking spiciness earlier.
let's go over here and play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Watson! Yep, she's right. Writes, AR is an injury-prone regular season riser and playoff dropper that can't defend. He wouldn't have been able to get us out of the first round versus Houston. We need to sign and trade him. I want Caruso. A lot going on there. I think that's too far to the end of the like not liking Austin spectrum.
I try not to tell other people how to fan if that's how they feel, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's how they feel, but yeah, that's I think that's a little extreme.
Also, the sign and trade thing is complicated because I believe that would immediately lock the Lakers in at the first apron, right? And
or yeah, no, is that traded somebody? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh no! If we're receiving the player, we can trade a player out and be fine.
Yeah.
But we can't receive a player in on a sign and trade, so we'd be okay, I think.
But it also limits the number of teams that Austin would be able to go to, and like the Atlanta. Well,
doesn't it increase them though? Because doesn't it open up to some teams that they could trade out that don't currently have the cap space to pay Austin? I think a sign and trade for him actually, like if there are other teams that wanted. Even Atlanta, like one of the ways they could get out of the money would be via sign and trade. So, yeah.
No, I mean that the number of teams that would be limited to the first apron, it would limit, like just inherently. Mm-hmm. But no, like as far as like pathways here, Atlanta is really the team that I keep coming back to. They've liked him for years. I've heard that their coach really, really likes him. And if the Lakers do reach that walk away number, Atlanta has a number of guys that I'd be kind of sort of interested in. It's like, man, it sucks to see Austin go, but you know, like if you could get like a Dyson Daniels out of it, like would kind of suck to see Austin go, but at least you get something useful. BG the Kid writes, the CBA sucks because teams get punished for drafting well and signing free agents that end up overperforming their contracts. Adam Silver is a chump. Agreed 100% on that last part. But the thing that like I wish the league did better, and I know that why it doesn't exist this way, but the thing that I wish that the league did better was like Remember when the Lakers signed Malik Monk, mm-hmm. and it was just crystal clear that they weren't going to be able to retain him because mm-hmm. he was so far outplaying his contract. And it's like, I wish that, like, when you sign a player who becomes an unrestricted free agent at a certain point, like within the first like 5 years of his career, that you just get at least partial bird rights on that player, mm. like just to be able to retain that player that you gambled on and maybe developed or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's something that I wish the league would do, but like the cheaper owners would never allow that yeah. kind of advantage for the Lakers.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we have one more here. Yep. She's right. Also writes, Brunson is a perfect example of an unproven player that took a pay cut to win. AR should do the same. AR has been drinking too many acai smoothies. Is Austin a smoothie? I guess he is a smoothie guy. He drinks one after every game. Mm-hmm. I see him like sipping on some kind of smoothie there. I don't know to what extent Brunson took a pay cut.
Oh, he took a big time pay cut. It was like $113 million less than he could have taken in November or in July 2024. Oh,
that's right.
He signed that. He makes less than all the numbers we've been talking about for Austin. That's part of my yeah. like, I don't, like that's the cheat code that the Knicks have. Aside from not having any bad money on the books, it's absolutely right. I think Brunson makes like $37 million, and that's yeah. why they were able to have such a good ass team around him, and like all of the, you know, the Becky Hammond, you know, too small to do that. It was like, well, if you got a good enough team around you, maybe not. Maybe you can. And a big part of that is because he didn't, like, again, it was like $113 million less over the lifetime of the contract.
That's right. Weren't there like tampering? They literally got in trouble for tampering for him once.
That was before, I think, with Dallas, like in the exchange from yeah. when he went from Dallas to the Knicks. This was the extension.
Or capture convention. After. Weren't there some capture convention?
Oh, were there? I don't know about that. Yeah.
I forget if Pablo says that they were going to look into that next or what, but, that is, yeah. And now that you say that, I remember the contract, and honestly, like, well, we're kind of sort of on the subject. There is nothing that NBA players should be rooting for more than Victor Wembanyama taking every single penny of the max contract that he could possibly get from the Spurs, because every penny under max value that he could get, like over the course of his career, becomes such a multiplier market inefficiency.
Yeah, why would he do that? Why would he do that?
I don't know. But like they've, you know, needed. Why would Jalen Brunson have done that? Why would, you know?
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Fair. So, but like, look, the numbers are so astronomical at this point that, like, I was hoping we would arrive at a place where these guys didn't need every single penny of all of these contracts, you know? Like, even while we're talking about how uncomfortable I am talking about guys taking so and so pay cut contracts, it's like, I mean, you're still going to be making the $30 million.
That is part of the humorous part, is like two dudes that don't have those kind of zeros on our contracts being like, isn't it a shame he is only making $37 million this year? Damn shit.
Pete, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Nah, man. It was great talking to you.
This was a fun one. That is going to do it for this episode, this week's episode here on the Lounge podcast feed. Please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Check out Pete's show, LFR. It's always excellent over there with Darius. And until the next time you guys hear from us, which will be Sunday, have a great rest of your guys' weekend. Make some adjustments.